Salome Bozerxade. I'm 39 years old from Chicago, Illinois. Today is January 7th, 2021, and I will be having a conversation with my colleague and friend, Dr. Kimia Amjadi.
Hello, my name is Dr. Kimia Amjadi. I'm a pediatrician here in Phoenix, Arizona. Today is January 7th, 2021. And my friend and I, we're here talking about Caring for Our Caregivers initiative. Do you want to say a little bit about this initiative?
So just to give a little bit of background information, we are right now in the middle of the COVID-19 worldwide pandemic that has brought everything to its knees. So everybody, we're about, I think, almost what, 10 months, 9 months in, and everybody has been on lockdown, quarantined, and the healthcare workers in the hospitals are understaffed as a lot of them get COVID or have had to leave. They are working ridiculous hours and under a great deal of stress. So this is a little bit of what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, it's been a challenging year, that's for sure. So, do you want to speak a little bit about the initiative and how it was started?
Sure. So basically, I am the current president of the Sufi Psychology Association, and it's a nonprofit group that was established in 1997 by a bunch of healthcare workers that found that their patients were gaining a lot of benefit when they utilized teachings of Sufism in their work. So that's kind of the larger organization. But what happened was when this pandemic occurred in February of 2020, in April, we saw what was happening to healthcare workers, and we just wanted to help them in any way we can. Kimia, we'll talk a little bit about our experiences and what that was like as a healthcare worker. And so, basically, that it was because of that mobilized us into creating this Caring for Our Caregivers initiative. And basically, this initiative, so studies that have been done on Sufi psychology and Sufi psychotherapy through universities and the Templeton Foundation has shown that this practice of Sufi psychology decreases stress, and it increases hope and it increases resiliency. And then one of the techniques of this is a meditation technique called Temarkoz. And Temarkoz is a Sufi meditation practice that involves visualizations, mind relaxations, progressive muscle relaxation, deep breathing, meditations, all of that. And this has been studied because it's been used at hospitals and universities, but it's been studied to show that when you're practicing Temarkoz, it will increase positive emotions and decrease perceived stress, even in times when stress is escalated. So in high stress situations, as the normal population is becoming more and more stressful and reactive to the environment, so the research on this form of meditation has shown that their stress, perceived stress goes down and their positive emotions are going up. So because of that, long story short, this is why we did that. And we thought our healthcare workers right now during this pandemic, they need something in the hospitals that's tangible to help them deal with this. So we teamed up with the Temarkoz Association, which is an organization that creates an app with these practices. And they donated these practices to us. And we loaded them onto tablets and have been donating them to hospitals around the globe. And what is crazy is, like in the beginning, none of us knew how to do this. It was like you would run to Target, buy a tablet, like try to figure out how do you upload information onto this tablet? How do you create a website? So very grassroots, but that is why we started this initiative. And so Kimia, I know you came onto this initiative and you've blown it up by contacting all the hospitals around the world, which is really amazing in the US. But if we could talk a little bit about and just share a little bit about what was your experience when COVID happened? Like as a healthcare worker, what is it that you went through?
Well, like we said, I mean, it's been a challenging year, definitely. Things have changed quite a bit. We're completely in a different situation now, today, compared to when this whole thing started back in February, March of 2020, which was in the beginning of the pandemic when we were first introduced to this virus. Yeah. There were so many unknowns back then. It was all new. We didn't know much about the virus itself. We didn't know anything about its epidemiology, the transmission. Was it how it was transmitted between person to person versus person to animals or animals to people? We didn't know how to effectively treat it. We didn't know what the risk factors were. Or I'm a pediatrician, so we just didn't know how it was behaving in kids, in children. Did it affect different age groups differently? Did it affect children differently compared to adults?
Yeah.
And the presentation, the severity was different for, you know, we just didn't know much about it. The scientific information, the research, everything was unclear. It wasn't just out yet. So their actual disease and the illness, the virulence and how deadly it was by itself, I mean, it created a lot of anxiety and fear. But in addition to that, once you also brought in all the unknowns and all the lack, you know, the lack of information that was associated with our understanding of the virus itself, yeah. Behavior, it just really created an atmosphere of panic and fear, honestly. We just didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, we are in a different situation now compared to back then, but we, back then, it was just scary because we didn't know how to protect ourselves as healthcare professionals. We didn't know what the proper PPE was. I mean, what's the difference between N95 versus N99? I mean, how well is it going to protect me in my visit with my patient when I'm in the room for 5 minutes versus 15 minutes? There was all of a sudden, as you recall, there was a shortage of cleaning supplies. There was a shortage of hand sanitizers. Everything was on back order. There were no masks. We didn't even have surgical masks. I remember I would ask my office manager, when are we going to get more masks in? And she would say, well, everything's on back order. I was working without a mask for 2 weeks at the beginning of the pandemic. And even once we did get something in by some kind of a donation from a construction company or what have you, we would ration our masks. The same mask that was being used for what's supposed to be used for one patient at a time was being used repeatedly, maybe for a day. And then even after the day, we would store it in a bag and go back to it after a few days and you reuse it again. It was ridiculous. I mean, it sounds really excessive now, but back then, that's what we were dealing with. Our whole this procedure, yeah, everything. We constantly had to modify every day on a daily basis. We had to modify what we were doing because every day we were getting new updates from the CDC, new updates from the World Health Organization, new things and new guidelines were coming out from the hospitals. So unless you stayed up with everything day to day, you would fall behind. So every day we had to modify how many patients we saw in a day, how much time we gave between patients. The nurses had to go in and clean the rooms between patients. People were so scared that they wanted all the respiratory patients or the coughing patients to be seen at the end of the day versus at the beginning of the day. And some people, some of my colleagues, they didn't even allow them inside the office. They would go to the patient's car, to the vehicle to see the patient because we just didn't know what we were dealing with and we didn't want them to come inside and cough on our our little 2-month-old babies. So it was just really an atmosphere of fear, of anxiety, of unknowns, uncertainties. And on top of all of that, you know, my husband, my daughter, we're all healthcare workers. We didn't know what we're bringing home from our daily routines. We didn't know what we were bringing home. Are we endangering each other? Are we endangering our older parents, you know, our other family members? You know, we just didn't know how to protect ourselves and how to make sure that the transmission was to a limited amount between each other. I mean, should we stand 4 feet away? Should we stand 6 feet away? It was just really, you know, it created a lot of unknowns and fears, and it affected our life, our livelihood, and it was very stressful, very frustrating. And I'm sure this was experienced by you as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm a clinical psychologist, so it was a little different for me in that, you know, I just went to teletherapy. It's you know, our sessions are daily, and so I was just doing, or I still am doing, I mean, my office still isn't open. But the thing about teletherapy is that for the first time, like, your patients are in your world and in your home, which adds a very different element. And there isn't a distance between what they're going through and what I'm experiencing. Like, we're all experiencing the same thing. And yet, as a psychologist, I'm supposed to help them kind of come out. So it's really a bizarre thing. But a lot of my patients are also healthcare workers. And I remember one of my patients who's a nurse. She said this was in the beginning of the pandemic. They gave her an N95 mask and they said, okay, you know, go and work with a patient who's got COVID. And she said, am I safe with this mask? And they're like, yes. And she's like, okay, like, I don't, because they don't know anything, you know? And so she goes in and she's working with the patient. And then a physician comes in full head to toe covered garb. Patient who's the nurse just kind of looked at him, and then she's sitting there with just her little N95 mask, and she was so scared. You know, she walked out of that room and she said, you know, I don't see it. I don't know if I have it. I don't know. It takes, what, 5 to 7 days incubation period, so I'm not going to know for 7 days. Some people don't have symptoms. Like, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So she's worried about her own mortality in life. She's worried about when she goes home, is she taking something to her family? So she said she would go home and she would strip in the garage and take off all her clothes because she didn't know if it has it, because we still don't know anything. She would go upstairs and clean the banister on her way up the stairs, making sure there's nothing there. She would take a shower and then she would quarantine herself in her room and tell her family, like, don't talk to me, because she was so scared of what am I going to give them. And then the next day she goes back and she's doing this. And then at this point, the other really crazy thing is, at this point, you know, for safety reasons, no one else is allowed in the hospitals but the healthcare workers and the patient. Right. So these incredible men and women, they were like the source of support for these patients, the only source of support for their patients. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, as the patients are dying, you are there. You are the only one to lean on them. So it's an incredible amount of stress that they were going through.
Absolutely.
And still are.
Absolutely. You know, with my family, the same thing. I mean, they would take their scrubs off in the garage. Everybody, you don't come in until you took your shoes, everything off, walked in. I mean, even then, I mean, you don't know, because like you said, a lot of times you're asymptomatic for a few days or for the entire duration of the illness, and you don't even know that you're infected. So, yeah, I mean, it was right now we're in a different situation, because right now we have a little bit more understanding about the disease. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was just overwhelming. We had to learn how to do telemedicine. We didn't have that. I mean, we didn't know how to code for it. We didn't know if the insurance companies would pay for it. It was all so new and changing rapidly, really fast. So I'm so glad that, you know, this initiative came about when it did, because, you know, the level of job burnout, the level of anxiety and stress was already on the rise before the pandemic. And when this hit us, it hit us hard. I mean, the healthcare workers were just suffering. And we still are. We still are. But, you know, the level of anxiety and the stress is just amazing during this pandemic.
So that's, you know, part of the reason for this initiative was, so a lot of people don't know that before COVID-19, burnout was on the rise with healthcare workers, and they actually have the highest rate of suicide amongst any profession. And that's healthcare workers, and that's before COVID.
Wow.
So when we started this initiative, you know, we're reaching out to hospitals in order to donate these. We're like, here, just have something that will decrease some of the stress in the hospital. And you are the one who, you've been like calling hospitals individually one at a time. You know, we're in right now at the end of the year, we're in over 290 hospitals. You have called these hospitals one by one and spoken to them. So can you share a little bit about what that was? What did they say? What are they experiencing? How did they take it?
Sure. I mean, this was a very personal thing for me because I wanted, you know, as physicians, you always want to help people no matter who they are. I'm a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. I don't just help kids. I like to help adults as well. So it was, and I was experiencing the same thing. I was going through the same thing. So it was very relatable. I knew what they were experiencing, and I think that made it a little bit more easier for me to be able to reach out to them, because there was that level of understanding in the background. In the beginning of the pandemic, It was kind of, you know, I had to explain everything to the hospitals because there were no such things as wellness rooms or respite rooms, or, you know, there wasn't that much attention brought to the mental health of the healthcare workers.
Yeah.
Mentioned it was on the rise. I mean, suicide level was the highest in our field, but still the attention wasn't there until the pandemic hit us. And in the beginning, when I called them, I had to just say, hey, this is for them. This is for them. And we're trying to help them, try to help their mental, you know, be able to help them with mentally and be able to help them to cope with what they're going through. They are suffering. There was, you know, the whole concept was very vague, though, for a lot of them. So when I was calling them early on, I had to do a lot of explaining and educating about the need for such programs in general. But especially now, we need these programs even more. So once, you know, I told them about the research and the PTSD and the job burnout, unless we do something, intervene something, they became more open. And as time went by, it became easier and easier. Since the hospitals actually started to see the need, and since they saw that, you know, it became more tangible to them, it created a sense of bonding. They were actually very impressed by our generosity and what we were doing. They couldn't understand that all of this was for free, and it was all donation-based and run by volunteers, and it was just specifically for the healthcare workers. They didn't have to buy anything or subscribe to any program. So they were very pleasantly surprised, and once they understood what we were actually offering, they were so grateful, so thankful. The conversation we had sometimes, it became very touching at times. I remember I got, we, you know, both parties would get so emotional. There was one time I had this conversation with one of the hospital employees in the state of Utah, and she was so touched by this gift that she told me how wonderful it would be if her daughter in the state of Washington, she was a ICU nurse, if she could get these tablets, if she would be able to benefit from them. She was so worried about her that she hadn't seen her for 4 months, her grandkids, she hadn't seen them for a long time. So I asked her daughter's name, her hospital's name, and so forth, and we actually did get in touch with them, and we did supply them. And then I called her back, and I told her, I gave her this information, and she couldn't believe it. She was just so happy. She was in tears. She says, I thank you so much. I mean, it was so wonderful to see that we did something good. I mean, it felt really good to me to be able to provide a little bit of relief to people. I would.
It's interesting because I know when we did one of the, you know, every time we got press and we got like some kind of article, I would get emails from people all over the nation saying, can you donate to our hospital? Can you go to that? But to your point, this happened to me as well, where this woman contacted us and said, my daughter is a nurse and she's, I can't remember, somewhere else, and was like, you know, I know she's stressed out. Can you send this to her? You know? And so we contacted the hospital and reached out to them and then donated to them. Or like, I know that like, we'll hear every time we heard like a news story of nurses that were struggling, we were like, okay, let's find the hospital, find out who we talk to.
I remember this one time we donated a couple of these tablets to one of the hospitals in Hawaii, in Honolulu. And the nurse called me back and she said, do you think that another facility that's not a hospital, it's a nursing care, a long-term care facility, do you think they can benefit? And of course, you know, we never said no to anybody. So it was so nice. She was so cute. She was so touched. She said, thank you so much. I remember you mentioned something that one of the facilities, they would let the staff go home with the tablets.
Yeah, it was one of the nursing homes. And I thought this is like an interesting way. They said, because nursing homes, you know, the population is so vulnerable. And so what they said was every time a staff got COVID, you know, they would get obviously sent home. But for weeks, that staff member was distraught because they weren't sure if they've given it to somebody else. And those people, you know, are very vulnerable. Yeah, every time someone was home with COVID, they would send them one of these tablets that had these exercises on them. So they could listen to them and relax and do some like meditation, do some tamarko so they can calm down. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, like, to be honest, like these exercises, they helped me feel way more connected and calm. When I look at my patients and what they're experiencing, and then I look at myself, I don't feel the same way, you know? And the teachings of Sufism are all based in self-knowledge. The entire purpose is for each person to know themselves, to tap into that strong, stable sense of self within. It's that essence that's quiet and calm and strong, that you can just tap into that when everything around you is chaotic. You know, it gives you something solid to hold on to. And so part of this practice of tamarkos is that it allows you to become and find that point of quiet inside of you, which is so important when everything feels chaotic. It's the only way I can describe it. It's like the eye of the storm, you know, it's where it's calm.
So. Absolutely. And we're dead in the center of it. And you know, what you mentioned was absolutely, I mean, and when they saw the benefits, when they saw how helpful these tablets are, it wasn't surprising. I mean, I would call just one hospital, but I would get a call back. And from there, we would end up donating to 14 hospitals because they saw the benefit and they wanted this for their sister hospitals. So it was just, everything clicked. Everything just fell into place. And Sufi psychology was ahead of the game. I mean, they thought about this way before anybody else. They were pioneers in this. They started this way before anybody else had even thought about them. And when the need was there, everything was ready to go. And that was the beauty about this initiative, how timely everything was and how everything just fell into place.
It really did. It feels like it's an interesting experience because it absolutely feels like, you know, I don't know if you've ever gone surfing, but that's what it feels like. It feels like there's this wave that's coming and you're like bodyboarding, because I don't actually know how to stand on a surfboard. There's this wave that's coming and you're like, okay, I'm going to start swimming with it. And it's just pulling you, you know, and that's how it felt like the wave. Yeah. It was like, we have this practice that absolutely makes sense. It's the only, like this, we have something that helps people. We you know, we just got it together. And like, all of a sudden, like, how, I mean, I know nothing about technology. How was I able to put all of this together is only because of like, it just felt so in tuned and aligned. And, you know, the fact that like, you know, I've been doing this practice and I'm like, I see a difference. I realize it. And to be able to then pass it on, and they needed, and it's just, I remember one of the nurses said, oh, this is so much better than pizza, you know, because they're getting food.
Yeah, that's the thing. I remember one of the hospitals I donated to here in Arizona, the director of the wellness program, you mentioned pizza, but she said that she was asking her hospital nurses and doctors, what do you need? What can we get you? And, you know, she was expecting food, lunch, gift cards, massage chair, something like that. But one thing that she kept hearing from them, can we have more tablets? That's what they were asking for. Mm-hmm. And it was really impressive to see that, to see and hear how appreciative they were of this program. And that even though we, you know, we could easily give them gift cards or something else, they would specifically ask for this, which points to the fact that how much you know, neglect there is regarding this mental health issue of the healthcare workers.
Well, and, you know, a lot of the, depending on the hospital, so like the more affluent hospitals, they have wellness rooms, right? They have like programs and they've been doing some of the research and they're thinking of ways to help their staff. But these county hospitals are more ones who are government-based or they lose funding. I mean, I got a call from a hospital in California, and the admin that called me said they have put patients, they had a huge outbreak. They had patients in every corner, like break rooms, they have patients in there now. Like, it was so filled with COVID. And she said, she just kept saying, it's a war zone. And she said, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do for my staff? And I said, do you have like a wellness room? And she's like, what wellness room? We don't really have anything that's for well-being of our staff. And, mm-hmm. and it was so sad to hear like what they were going through. And so mm-hmm. at that point, like, we were very fortunate that, you know, I live alone. I don't have any like family or any responsibility. I can work from anywhere because it's telehealth. So I was able to say, you know, I'll come out there. I'll come into that hospital and we'll, we donated two wellness rooms to them. So it was like this strange time of traveling during COVID, you know, nobody like just masks, you're afraid you're going to get something. And then, you know, I needed all this equipment, like couches and all these things. So we had ordered them from Amazon and they were shipped out there to one of our members or houses out there. And I like rented a car and they filled up the car with everything. And again, like, no one can go near this hospital because it was such a hot COVID site. Mm-hmm. And then I go, they're giving me masks, they're giving me shields, everybody's very afraid, and set up these two rooms. And we were very aware of, we just wanted to be a place of respite to give relief. So it was like everything, instead of the dull color, we had colorful things in there. Instead of the fluorescent lights, we put in floor lamps, we put on soft music. So just even by the act of walking in, people down. But we put the tablets in there and like had all sorts of like beverages and like refreshments. And one of the nurses, she's like, what is this? And we're like, well, we're creating a wellness room for you. Uh-huh. And she said, oh, I now have a place to cry. Like, that's what she needed, was a place to cry, because her patients are dying and she doesn't even know how to help them. And she's working ridiculous hours because no one else is around. And
Right. Yeah, it you know, a lot of times they feel abandoned. They feel neglected. You know, here they are working two shifts back to back because there's a shortage of staff. People call in sick. You know, they get positive or they get exposed and they have to stay home. And so the other remaining staff has to work double shifts. And here they are working back to back. They're, you know, putting their life in danger. They're putting their family's lives in danger. And then at the same time, people you know, don't wear masks, and people don't even think there is a virus out there. They think this is all a conspiracy theory. So it they feel neglected. They feel abandoned. They feel betrayed, and they're exhausted. They're just absolutely exhausted. And the emotions are just very strong in the negative sense. So it's really rewarding. The whole initiative and what we've been doing has been so rewarding because it's the minimum that we can do for them during this frustrating, difficult time.
So what is your experience? Like, how have you felt with both the practices, because I know you do them, the same thing, but also just with this initiative, like, what has this all done for you?
Sure. Well, it's helped me with my mood, with yeah. my attitude, with my concentration, my daily routines. It's helped me with my organization. I mean, most importantly, it's helped with my sleep, my body. Yeah, absolutely. The sleep was a major issue, but I feel healthier. I eat healthier. It's helped me to breathe and, you know, forget about the stress, be more focused. You know, it when you relate to your patients, when you truly understand what your patients are saying, what they're going through, and when you're taking care of yourself, you can take care of them. You do a better job of taking care of them when you're watching out for yourself. The act of donating and volunteerism and community service by itself is rewarding enough. But the fact that you're doing something good and bringing a resource and a tool to help your fellow healthcare workers, it's so rewarding. It's taken away my own stress, my own anxiety, and my own exhaustion. A lot of that negative energy and the emotions that can overwhelm you, the fears, they've turned into something positive. It makes me appreciate what I have. It's opened my eyes to the value of what I have. It's helped me become more successful in my job and helping others. You know, we're just donating, but it's just so rewarding because it's doing more than that. It's helping me as well. Not only others, it's helping me. Are you experiencing the same thing?
I mean, I think I'm getting the most benefit from this.
Right. Isn't that right? Uh-huh.
In addition to like the practices that like really helped me just feel centered and a lot more help. I mean, gosh, I feel before I started doing the practices regularly, I mean, I've done them like on and off, but before I started regularly doing them, I definitely felt more reactive. I was feeling much more lonely and sad, but this really kind of helped me. And then this initiative gave me a sense of purpose, you know, like I didn't even know I could care so much about something like this, like something that's outside of myself, like, you know, that's for others.
Yeah.
I care about my patients and I went into the field, but also I think over the years you kind of get burnt out, but this really, it lit something in me. And it feels, not only does it feel good, which, you know, but also it's benefiting me and just balancing my life to do this alongside it. So it's not, my life isn't so me focused, so selfish, which is what I felt for a while.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, modern medicine has never experienced anything like this.
This has been insane.
It really is. We've never experienced so much fear and uncertainty and anxiety and the need to have healing for us and for our patients. We've never experienced this ever. And, you know, as healthcare professionals, you are compassionate people by nature. And you just want to give. But, you know, there comes a point where you need to take care of yourself. You need to love yourself. And you need to, become more aware of replenishing yourself and your energy. And, you know, focus more on the positive and concentrate on love and peace rather than on the negativity and the downward, exhausting, fatigue route that it can take you if you let it.
And I'm really worried about kind of the outcome, because the research that's coming out of some of these other countries who are doing research on their healthcare workers is showing that healthcare workers are exhibiting PTSD symptoms similar to like veterans that come home from war. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really scary place to be. And then on top of that, right now, there is the vaccine is coming and it's here and people are beginning to get it. But usually with things that such as burnout, you know, in the midst of the crisis, people, your adrenaline is pushing you and pulling you forward, and you're in fight or flight mode and you're just going through. Mm-hmm. It's when actually the crisis dies down and when it's all kind of resolved that all of a sudden now your body is going to take a hit. You know, like, so for example, when I was in graduate school, mm-hmm. you know, I never got sick. I went straight through, you know, bachelor's, master's, doctorate, never got sick, just pushed through, you know, whatever, all this schooling.
Thank God.
And then when I finished school, I remember I got so sick. My body was just like breaking down and I couldn't understand what was happening. And my physician told me, he was like, well, because your body has been in this crisis mode, just pulling you through. You didn't realize the strain that was put on it. And then now, you know, now you're feeling it. And so it's like, I worry about the aftermath and what this is going to look like, number one. And then number two, how this is going to affect everybody on a grand scale. Because when our healthcare workers are sick, they're, you know, when they're burnt out, they make more mistakes. They misdiagnose. That's what the research shows. On top of that, like they feel horrible, you know? So this is really a problem on a grand scale. Yes, so absolutely. We need something. And I think the unfortunate thing about this crisis is that at least it raised some awareness that we need something more for them.
You bring up a very good point. It's a very solid point that, you know, we're just in the beginning of this. Even after the pandemic is over, we're still going to face the long-term effects of all of this. But at the very least, you know, the awareness has now, you know, it's become, people now know what's happened and they are more aware of the need for this, you know, this type of mental health assistance. And I think at the very least, we brought a little bit of attention to it by doing the initiative. It's definitely been an incredible journey. I feel blessed to be a small part of it. It's helped me, I think, more than them, just because it's been so helpful in every aspect of my life. And I hope to be able to continue what we started for some time.
I think this is really important. I think this needs to, this should be the bare minimum that we have in places. And the other part is, you know, when you look at burnout, you know, I've spoken on burnout, talked about research burnout. When you look at burnout and healthcare workers that give so much to others, a lot of it, the underlying thing is that you're trained to give so much to others and focus so much on others that you lose a sense of what you need. You don't even know how to tap into what you need. Right. Which is why Sufi psychology and Sufi teachings, which are about knowing yourself, it fits beautifully in teaching people to become aware of who they are, what they need, so they can make sure they're helping themselves. Like it's an important, I think, element. And I'm excited for the work that we're going to do and how this is going to just hopefully progress and we can get it out to as many people as possible.
I hope so too. They say doctors are the worst patients, and I thank you. It's definitely been a challenge trying to get my colleagues to at least try to help themselves and start thinking about replenishing themselves and giving a little love to their own self. And I'm just blessed to be able to do this.
Well, this has been great, and this conversation has been great. So thank you for meeting with me and talking with me about all this.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
It'll be better.
I hope so too.